L'Officine Universelle Bouly presents Ancient Beauty Rituals, Episode 4, Sovereign Raya's Warrior Workout. Portuguese explorer Domingo Pais stays at the court of the Vijayanagara Empire and witnesses the legendary warrior workout of the supreme ruler of the empire, including sesame oil massage and saber exercise, in 1520 southern India. "So this is the fabled kingdom of Vijayanagara," exclaimed the young and curious traveller Domingo Pais, weary yet excited about what lay beyond the plains below. From atop a hillock bordering the kingdom, he looked down at a flat land, reminding him of the plains of Santarém, back home in Portugal. Rodrigo, an experienced Portuguese soldier travelling with him, looked into the horizon, seemingly lost in some thought. His reverie broken, he said almost with reverence, "I hear the city is grander than Rome, and diamonds and rubies are traded by basketfuls on city streets. The king Krishnadevaraya is known to be an invincible warrior." The wind was stronger in these parts, and Domingo's cape blew, silhouetting him against the dawn-tinted sky, a fine young man on his steed, eager for the adventures that lay ahead. It was circa 1520. For the past few days, their Portuguese delegation of horse traders and a few soldiers had been travelling from Goa, a busy port city in West India, to Vijayanagara, or the City of Victory in South India. They were on their way to meet the legendary King Krishnadevaraya, or Raya, to secure a contract for supplying the finest Arabian horses for his army. Of course, there was a political agenda as well, offering support to fight a common enemy, Adil Shah of the Sultanate of Bijapur. Domingo eagerly awaited the appointed audience with the king in a couple of days. The Portuguese were the first Europeans to set foot in India on an exploration led by Vasco da Gama. He set sail from Lisbon in 1497 on the São Gabriel with a fleet of three ships going around Africa's Cape of Good Hope and landing at India's Malabar coast in May 1498. The voyage began with fanfare. Guns were fired, anchors heaved, and sails loosened. But the journey was perilous. Storms ravaged the ships. Mutinies were aplenty, yet da Gama carried forth, throwing mutineers behind bars. By the year 1510, the Portuguese had established Goa as capital of the Portuguese Estado da India and were soon controlling the spice trade from India, exporting pepper, cloves and cinnamon to Lisbon. The aristocracy, nobility and the elite of 16th century Europe demanded spices, which were used for various purposes, to enhance the taste of foods and for medicinal as well as cosmetic purposes. At a banquet, a European host would offer guests a plate with various spices piled upon it as a sign of the wealth at his or her disposal. Intricate pomanders in gold and silver, with cloves and cinnamon, ambergris and Damascus roses, among other fragrant herbs and flowers, were hung on belts or worn as necklaces to create an aura of pleasing personal fragrance. Spices were also used in beauty recipes. There is one for keeping the skin clear of pigment that includes nutmeg, mace, ginger, and cloves. One for softening chapped hands mentions the use of cinnamon, camphor, cloves, nutmeg, and rosewater. Further, having seized Middle East ports like Hormuz and Aden, the Portuguese controlled all foreign horse imports to Goa, monopolizing the South Asian overseas horse trade. This put them in a very strong position of negotiating lucrative deals with the Indian rulers, who sought the Arabian and Persian war horses for their cavalries. The rise of Portuguese control in India was thus closely linked to war and horses. After a day's travels and crossing several outer fortifications, Domingo Pius and his party rode into the capital city of Vijayanagara. People of all sorts bustled about, including some foreigners. Elephants ambled through, backs draped with richly embroidered cloth. Rows of beautifully designed buildings and expansive gardens flanked the street. Street musicians added to the exotic festive ambiance. Aromas of freshly made local breads and curries from a roadside inn reminded the travellers that they needed to rest and refresh. Let us head to our quarters near the palace, where arrangement for our stay has been made, announced the leader of the delegation. Inside his well-appointed room in a beautiful mansion, Domingo stretched on the soft bedding with sheets of the finest cotton. A cheerful native attendant soon appeared with some fresh pomegranate and sweet lime juice. Ah, just what I needed. It has been a very warm day on the roads. Domingo smiled at the server, who then proceeded to place a copper tray laden with the choicest grapes, oranges, limes, pomegranates, jackfruit and mangoes in the room. Lunch will soon be ready, sire, the attendant reminded him. Domingo realized how hungry he was. As he ventured into the common dining area, he saw a lavish spread of local delicacies in copper vessels. As the delegation seated themselves around the low table, young, bejeweled ladies began the dinner service, ladling a spicy warm soup into their bowls, followed by the main course of rice, along with a sequentially served variety of aromatic lentil and vegetable curries, fowl, fish, and meat preparations. Pickles of tender mango and jackfruit added to the already rich flavours. The middle course was sweet, with servings of sweet porridge and fruits mixed with milk. No wonder their spices are costlier than gold back home. Such heat, flavours and aromas, exclaimed Domingo. I feel like I have eaten for the next few days, groaned Rodrigo, seated next to him. Barely had he uttered those words, came forth the final course to the rescue, a cool glass of buttermilk, tempered with special spices to aid digestion. I also think that one is a really pretty lady, quipped Domingo appreciatively, throwing a flirtatious glance at one of the servers, her delicately featured face behind a thin veil. Not the time or place, Domingo. Tomorrow we will visit the Imperial Palace for an audience with the King. Let us retire, for we have to make an early start to prepare ourselves, reprimanded Rodrigo. World travellers who visited the Vijayanagara Empire in the 16th century described the abundance and cheapness of provisions. They call it the best-provided city in the world, well-stocked with rice, wheat, grains, Indian corn, and pulses. The markets were said to be overflowing with a wide variety of fruits available at a cheap price. Indian traditions of health and beauty are rooted in the ancient science of Ayurveda, or the science of life. It's 5,000-year-old holistic healing tradition. Now adopted the world over, Ayurveda revolves around a central belief that every human being's constitutional energy is predominantly ruled by a specific permutation and combination of the energies of fire, water, air, and ether. This combination, when in balance, leads to good health and beauty. Since it advocates beautifying from the inside out, this means eating as per both season and individual energy combinations. Sitting in a straight posture while eating is mandated. Thus, meals followed a set of courses, ensuring a well-balanced diet. Pickles of various kinds prepared from tender mango, lemon, fresh ginger, and green pepper were the first to be served at a dinner. While rice, lentils, meats, and fish were an important part of the main course, sweetmeats and juicy fruits like mangoes, grapes, pomegranates, plantains, jackfruit, figs, dates, apples, and oranges formed the most important part of a dinner and were usually served in the middle. The meals ended with a cooling digestif. Princes and nobles used plates and bowls made of gold, but in general, plantain and other leaves and bowls of leaves were in vogue. Copper and earthen vessels were also in use. Beautifying rituals and recipes were also driven by seasons, and ingredients used during the cold seasons were quite different from those used in warm seasons. A 1500-year-old book on Ayurveda mentions special cosmetic oils and the use of clarified butter for facial beautification. A description of a face scrub and the ritual goes as: take some red lentils and pound with honey. The paste so prepared, rubbed for 7 nights, gives the splendor of the petals of the white lotus flower to the face. Many such natural remedies have been indicated for hair growth, prevention of falling hair, and premature graying. Fragrant hair rinses and fumigants were popular, as also were fragrant bath powders and body deodorants. Men and women in the Vijayanagara kingdom adopted many such practices. The faint sound of temple bells ringing somewhere in the city woke Domingo Pais. Today was an important day, and he was keen to be shown around the king's palace and see the sovereign in person. He called out to Luis, his personal attendant. "Have you laid out my clothes, Luis?" Domingo had just finished washing and carefully combing his short bob back, making sure he used some perfumed pomade on his hair and starch on his carefully groomed beard. Luis helped him put on his finest clothes. The shirt, ornamented with grey and gold embroidery, was Domingo's favourite. It made him look dapper and did justice to his noble lineage. The sleeveless black jerkin went over his fashionably slashed doublet, the white of his shirt visible through the slashes and at his frilled cuff. His brown hose was lined in a fabric of the same colour. He put on his codpiece. Luis brought his black shoes, wide at the toe. He completed his look with a black damask cloak, of fabric suitable to the warm weather. "How do I look, Luis?" asked Domingo, knowing very well that he cut a fashionable figure. "Fit to be a king's guest, senor," grinned Luis. "Do check if Rodrigo is dressed and ready to leave. We must not delay," said a visibly pleased Domingo. "At once, senor," and off ran Luis to check on the others. 16th century Portugal was greatly influenced by fashion and styles of the Spanish court. While the first two decades saw Italy as leading the trends, later, Spain's political and cultural dominance was reflected in the spread of the fashion from Madrid to the courts of Europe and beyond. The main elements of male Spanish court dress were the hose and the doublet, which included stiff elements and padding, shaping and exaggerating the body and inhibiting its natural movements. Additionally, coats and capes were worn as outer garments. A white linen ruff, varying in size according to time period, and a hat usually completed the picture of the perfect Spanish courtier. During the Middle Ages, it became commonplace for the upper classes to grow beards, and knights especially cultivated their facial hair as a sign of masculinity and honour. In older men, it also conveyed the impression of wisdom and a lifetime of experience. Men used pomade and wax to shape their beards, which they applied with tiny combs. Starch was also used. They even had gadgets to keep their beards and moustaches in shape while they slept. On reaching the palace gates, the delegation members were counted and duly led in. They would be shown around the palace, followed by an audience with the king. As they made their way through the king's residential area, Domingo Pais could not help but stare at the opulence he was now surrounded with. Gold, pearls, gems and other precious stones were all around, in embroideries, framing furniture and furnishings by master craftsmen, and even on porch covers. "Do you think the king is friendly, Rodrigo?" he asked. I hear he is of a very warm and welcoming nature, especially to foreigners. He is also very far-sighted and shrewd. He sees the benefit in our allowance. I am sure we will be well received, as we have already experienced in our accommodations, assured Rodrigo. Soon, Domingo saw the king, decked in fine white clothes, ornamented with gold roses, with a priceless diamond necklace around his neck. His headgear was a brocade cap of the finest silk and reminded Domingo of a war helmet from his native Iberia. He welcomed them with grace, enthusiasm, and curiosity. I hope you are being well looked after. I would also like to know more about your country and your king, Raya smilingly addressed their leader. The king enjoyed listening about Dom Manuel and his kingdom in Portugal. He then proceeded to gift the delegation leader a brocade tunic, along with a cap similar to his own, to others, some richly embroidered cloth, a token of friendship and love. The palace of the king was in the royal centre of the city. A resplendent structure, it was divided into the ceremonial hall and the private residential section of the king. The queens were each housed in their own separate, well-provided quarters, a short distance from the king's. The ceremonial hall, its walls decorated with exquisite paintings and other items, also housed the king's lion throne and was used for hosting public visitors and viceroys of other kingdoms. The women's residential wings is said to have housed around 12,000 women, including the three principal queens and nine other queens, the queen's staff and courtesans. No men were allowed near the women's quarters, and if the king desired to meet with a wife, a eunuch would carry the summons to the queen, and she would then visit the king, accompanied by her security and handmaidens. There are raised platforms for dance spread throughout the royal palace enclosure, as well as carved figurines depicting the king's favourite queen, herself an erstwhile courtesan, practising her passion here. A colossal 30-square-metre structure close to the royal enclosure was the queen's bath. It was both a lavish bathing area for the king and his queens, as well as a pleasure chamber. The bath is surrounded by beautiful arched corridors, having pillars and projecting ornate balconies with windows. The queens and princesses had numerous attendants to help them bathe and change, adorning them with flowers and perfumes made of rose water, civet musk, and sandalwood. The stairs leading to the king's bedchamber were lined with gold, and the porch was covered with cane work decorated with works of rubies, pearls, and diamonds. The crossbars of the king's bed were covered with gold, the mattress covered with black satin, and a railing all around of pearls a span wide. During festivities, the entire palace would glow with the light of thousands of earthen lamps and the fragrance of flowers. The palace also housed the empire's treasury, with diamonds, gold, silver, and gemstones stored safely in an underground cellar. In the evening, as Domingo Pais and Rodrigo walked through the market colonnade, surrounded by merchants trading in all sorts of diamonds and gems, exquisite silks, intricate crafts, and even horses, Domingo spoke. The kingdom is thriving, and I see our opportunity for establishing a good trade here. I agree. The king is also surrounded by enemies and was certainly pleased with the offer of our support against Adil Shah. Shah is being a nuisance to our Portuguese base in Goa as well. Rodrigo came from a stock of navy men. His father had been part of Vasco da Gama's second voyage to India in 1502. I recall my father narrating his adventures on the sea, how en route they attacked and drowned Arabian ships to secure the route, how da Gama had led the conquest of India's shores. We need to fortify our position in this country now. Goa must not be lost. And with Raya's armies against Adil Shah, we can rule India for generations to come. Rodrigo was ambitious and wanted to ensure their trip was a success, both economically and politically. Domingo inhaled deeply, taking in the fragrances he was surrounded with. The streets of the city were regularly sprinkled with perfumed water. He could also smell myriad fragrances on people passing by. Musk, civet, camphor, saffron, sandalwood, rosewater, and aloe wood. Women everywhere wore flowers in their hair. Hand fans were made of flowers, and at night they would make a bed of flowers and sleep on it. He could get used to this decadence. Ismail Adil Shah, of Iranian descent, was the scion of the Adil Shah dynasty in the Deccan Plateau of India. His territory bordered Goa on the west, which he lost 10 years ago to the Portuguese in 1510, and the Vijayanagara kingdom towards the south. With a history of conflict with both the Portuguese colonizers and the kingdom of Vijayanagara, he was constantly on the lookout for an opportunity to reclaim his lost territory of Goa. With its fertile lands and rich mines of diamonds and iron, the Deccan had always attracted merchants, adventurers, and preachers from far and near. It was a place of wealth and cosmopolitanism. Its sultans were connoisseurs of art, music, poetry, literature, and craftsmanship. They lived surrounded by opulence and refinement. Adil Shah cut a fine figure. His morning routine included cleaning his teeth with the twig of the medicinal Indian lilac tree, known for its antibacterial and cleansing properties, and a tooth powder prepared with crushed pearls, musk, amber, aloes wood, and camphor. After the royal bath and being perfumed, some cooling coal would be applied to his eyes, and he would then be helped to dress for the day. The coal, or black eyeliner, originated in ancient Egypt and Persia, and was used for both beautifying and for its supposed benefit of soothing any eye ailment. In India, it was prepared by dipping a white, thin muslin cloth into sandalwood juice, which was then left to dry in the shade. The cloth was dipped and dried in the sandalwood juice several times throughout the day. Following this procedure, a wick was made out of the cloth, which was then used to light a lamp made out of mud and castor oil. A brass vessel was kept over the lamp with a little wide gap left open in between. The lamp was left burning overnight, and the following day, a few drops of clarified butter were added to the soot left at the bottom of the lamp. This mixture was then placed in a clean and dry box, ready to be used. The Shah's costume included a tall headgear, a muslin robe that he wore over an open upper garment tied at the waist, an intricately embroidered silk waistband, a lower garment, and exquisite slip-on shoes with gold embellishments. The costumes of the Deccan sultans were inspired by Persian styles. Adorned with exquisite jewelry in gold, diamond, pearls, and rubies, the Shah was a regal symbol of power, wealth, and gentility. While patronizing culture was paramount, the sultans of the Adil Shah dynasty can also be credited for introducing tobacco to India through Portuguese traders who brought the plant from the Americas. The nobility smoked from an apparatus called the hookah, the base of which would be made of silver and gold inlaid in a zinc alloy. Things came to a head in 1520, when an officer of Raya, who had been sent to Goa to purchase horses from the Portuguese, defected with the money to Adil Shah's camp, who refused to send him or the money back. Raya got the opportunity he was waiting for, to battle it out with Adil Shah. The Portuguese, seeing their advantage, assured the king of not just a supply of the best Persian horses, but also cavalry support in an attack against Adil Shah. The next morning filled Domingo Pius with excitement for the day ahead, for he had the honour of being allowed to witness the king's warrior workout. He had heard much about the valour and dynamism of the king, and could not wait to observe the spectacle. On reaching the palace gates, he was greeted by the head of the king's guard, his official guide through the morning. "Welcome. It is good to see you again. Please remember to be discreet and observe the king from a distance," he gently reminded Domingo. "Yes, of course," Domingo nodded in eager agreement. Led from the gates to a large courtyard, Domingo now saw the king preparing for his exercise. He rises early before sunrise and follows a disciplined routine in the morning and the day to keep himself agile, both mentally and physically. "He is deeply feared and respected by his army and enemies alike," whispered the guard. Domingo watched the king, wearing a loincloth, being massaged with oil all over his body by an attendant. He then reached out for what was a lot of amber-coloured unguent in a vessel and drank it straight. "What is he drinking?" asked Domingo Pais. "Ah, that is sesame oil. The king drinks a 3/4 pint every day before his exercise. He believes it to be the secret elixir for his boundless energy. He will now work out till he has sweated all the oil out," said the guard proudly. Domingo wasn't too sure about getting the oil sweated out, but nonetheless he watched, taken in by the sight before him. The king proceeded to pick up some earthen weights and started working his muscles. The weights done, he began a sword exercise, sparring with a trainer. This was followed by some wrestling practice in the wrestling pit. "That is a lot of working out so early in the morning," exclaimed Domingo. "But it is not over yet. The king will now practice horse riding till the sun comes up," said the guard. Domingo watched as the king proceeded to head for the horse riding exercise. He was then informed that after this, the king would be bathed by a holy man and would then proceed for his morning prayers, followed by attending to his official duties. The guard's tone now turned somber as he said, "You know that we have been preparing to attack Adil Shah. The king is also readying himself for battle." Raya was both a feared general and a connoisseur of the arts, literature, and poetry, surrounding himself with learned and accomplished men. He hosted elaborate festivals of poetry, where poets from across the land recited their compositions. He had also never lost a battle. The Battle of Raichur, between Raya's and Ismail Adil Shah's armies, took place in 1520. Known rightfully as the Lord of Men, the king was reputed for his ability to garner large armies and fighting troops through an extremely efficient system of smaller lords in the kingdom, who maintained armies that were made available as and when the king demanded. As chronicled, an army of almost 1 million men fought on the side of Raya, with more than 30,000 horses and 550 elephants. The soldiers were armed to the teeth, along with battalions of archers, musketeers, and shieldmen, who carried swords and poignards in their girdles. The horses and elephants were attired for battle, and sharp knives were fastened to the elephants' tusks. As a chronicler narrates, "The extraordinary noise made by the drums, trumpets, and shouts of the men was so great that even the birds fell down into the soldiers' hands, stricken with terror, and it seemed as if the sky would fall to the earth." A group of 20 Portuguese musketeers led by Cristóvão de Figueiredo, the leader of our delegation, helped take the fort of Raichur. Along with his snipers, Figueiredo opened fire with their long-distance, high-precision muskets, something Adil Shah's army had never encountered before. With the Portuguese covering him from behind, Raya took the citadel. My friend Rodrigo was one of the musketeers, and that is how the Lord of Men vanquished the Shah. Domingo smiled at the awestruck look on his son's face as he narrated his adventures in India yet once more.
This was an episode of Beauty Rituals Through the Centuries from Officine Universelle Bully. you will soon find a new story that will take you on a journey through time. Our podcasts are available on all listening platforms.